Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running live broadcast on YouTube and subsequent podcast. Today, we're going to be talking to Arc of Attrition 50. We're going to be talking about the Arc of Attrition 50 again after my unsuccessful attempt the other weekend. So I want to find out how it is possible to be successful on your first go and come up with a top 10 tips for newcomers. So we're going to be today chatting to two of my patrons, Sean O'Keefe, who you can just see there to my left. Hi, Sean. Sean, how are you doing?
Hello. Yeah, not bad, you?
Yep, I'm good. And Christian Poulton, who will be on after Sean has to leave us to go back to work. So also, quick shout out to patron Jade Barrett, who also completed the race as well. She's working today, so she can't be live with us, but I did bump into her at registration show. She's in the YouTube film of the race. And just before we start, I'm sponsored by NAC Sports Nutrition, so I just have to tell you that I used these energy bars on the Arc of Attrition. My favourite was this peanut butter and chocolate one, and the chocolate waffle. You guessed it, I do like a bit of chocolate. So combined with real food like tuna sandwiches and crisps, these were fantastic on the Arc, very tasty, very easy to eat, and they felt good on my stomach as well. So highly recommended. If you fancy trying them, use my code WILDGINGERRUNNING for 15% off at uk.nac.com, and I'll put a link to that in all the stuff below as well. So, Sean, thanks for waiting there.
Sorry.
Congratulations on your Arc 50. Am I right in thinking you were successful first time with your time of 11 hours, 9 minutes and 50 seconds?
You know it better than me. Yeah, first time at the Arc and first 50 miler.
Wow. Now that's incredible. Your first 50 miler. You did choose a tough one there. What made you choose the Arc?
So I ended on the wait list. So basically I did the Arc 100 course over 20 days in the summer, just because it's nice to go around. I camped in a few different places, and once I'd done it, I thought, well, okay, it doesn't seem too bad, although that was in summer conditions, so I'll sign up for the wait list. Probably I won't get in, that's fine, I'll do it the subsequent year. But then I think the deadline for people pulling out was the end of September or something like that, and a couple of days later I got in, so presumably enough people pulled out. So it was kind of accidental. It wasn't really on the plan.
Okay, so it wasn't like a planned first 50 miler. So you did the 100 course over a few weeks last summer. Like, where do you live? What's your job? How were you able to do that? Because I live about 7 hours away from Cornwall, so yeah, that wouldn't have been an option for me.
No, so I live in the Lakes now. At the time I was living in Warwickshire, so still, you know, 5 hours or something like that.
Yeah,
but I work in IT and it's all remote, so I can do work during the day, and then when hits five, sign out, and then straight onto the trails, which is great.
Yeah. Oh, so you just lived down there for a bit, did you?
Essentially, yeah.
Yes.
Worked in coffee shops or from hotspots at the campsite, depended on what was available.
Oh, cool. So were you camping as well then?
Yeah.
Yes, in a tent over the summer.
Yeah.
Cool. Fantastic. It's
lovely. Lovely over summer. On whatever it was last weekend, two weekends ago.
Oh, that's awesome. And so with this being your first 50 miler, what has been your previous race experience then?
So my first ultra was a 65k random distance that just happened to be, it was a point to point from Droitwich Spa to Broadway in the Cotswolds, which was almost exactly a year before the Arc actually, and it was 0 or 1 degrees the whole time. I had literally like icicles on my arm hair the whole way around. It was hard.
Wow.
And then the UCS 50 last summer, and that's it. Those are all my ultras. So oh, wow. I chose all stupidly hard ones for no reason.
Yes, the UTS 50 is really hard. It's so yeah. hilly. There's four really significant climbs there, including two ascents and two descents of Snowdon, highest mountain yeah. in Wales. So yeah, that's amazing. Do you just like a tricky terrain then? Is that what you prefer and that's what you kind of excel on?
Yeah, I think I probably do. It's kind of the main reason for doing ultras is part the challenge and part going to nice, interesting places. And I suppose often that then comes with difficult terrain. So living in the lakes now, I could just access some quite nice trails all the time. So the reason to go somewhere else and race really is to see something else kind of exceptional.
Yeah, something really cool. Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. Like, I have got a few more ultras booked in not so exciting places, but I do like to go and, yeah, experience those amazing places and remote places as well. So you were really comfortable within those cutoffs because, like, for people who don't know, I got timed out at Godeffrey, which is about, like, almost 40 miles into the course. You're supposed to get there at 8 p.m. I got there about 8:15. But, Sean, with your time of 11 hours and 10 minutes, basically, you were well within that 15-and-a-half-hour whole race cutoff. How did you find the race?
So I think, yeah, cutoffs wasn't really a problem, but it was tough going, especially that section that everyone complains about between, Cape Cornwall and St Ives, right?
Yes. Yeah. So like, yeah. And is it between Pendeen and St
Ives?
Oh,
Pendeen,
especially?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just looking at the stats.
It's just really difficult to choose your own cadence because they've like just it'll go from like boulders to normal terrain to uphill to downhill. You're constantly just having to adjust your step all the time, and I think it's really draining. So although I wasn't really in trouble for time because I went too fast at the beginning, I definitely could have dropped during that section.
Really,
it's very easy to get into that mindset of being like, if it's this hard the rest of the way, then I'm done, it's too hard. I think you just have to push through. I probably went through, I don't know, 3 or 4 times like that during the race of like, this is just too hard, just stop, you know, why are you doing it? Even on some of the road sections, I think it's normal in an ultra to just go through those cycles.
Yeah.
You have to, part of the skill is working out, is this because I'm just tired or is there something actually wrong and I should stop because it's sensible to do so? I think, I would be interested to do something hard enough that I wasn't by speed guaranteed to make it.
Yeah.
So if I went to 100 now, like I'm not really conditioned to do that. 100 miles, sorry. So that would be a much more of a struggle in terms of times. So I think it'd be interesting to see what your decision making process is if you are that close. That's why I really like your series. To see what the thought process of someone towards the back of the pack is.
Yeah, the last
about
place.
About how they're going to manage their time. Yeah.
Yeah, last place, I'm proud of it. Yeah, I know. I was like, what do I say to Sean? He was just within the cutoffs. What's he going to say to us? But I do have lots of questions for you. So you were really comfortable within the cutoffs. I want to start right at the beginning of the race because the Minack Theatre is an absolutely amazing start. There's tons of people just crowded into that amphitheatre. It's on the edge of the cliff and there's loads of steps. There's like 50, 60, maybe a million steps to climb up before you get like out onto the cliff top and the coast path. Were you like super strategic? Did you put yourself at the front there so that you weren't, because I was like hanging around for 5 minutes in there kind of just waiting to walk up the steps, which is one of my excuses for being cut off. How did you find that bit? Did you place yourself at the front or were you just walking up the steps like a normal person and then queuing? There was like lots of queuing, wasn't there, in the first sort of mile or so of the race?
I can't ever not race. So last weekend, there was a 5K that they're running in my local town to try and fundraise / prove feasibility for a park run. Mm-hmm. Obviously, being this close to an ultra, I was like, no, I'm just going to jog around. Sub 30, something like that. Couldn't help it. Had to race it.
Yeah.
Well, close to race it. I held back a little. So I just can't not. So yeah, I put myself right at the bottom of the steps.
Yes.
On
right,
the left-hand
elite people,
set.
Like with Holly Stables and all the top people.
Well, she went past me not that far in, but so she must have started behind. So, and in fact, the first four or five people on the set of stairs that I chose didn't go particularly fast and just kind of walked up the stairs.
Oh, okay.
Even at the right at the front. So although I tried to strategically put myself somewhere, it didn't really work because whoever had managed to get there just went slow anyway. So the right-hand steps, as you were looking up, were much quicker.
They were quicker. Okay. Yeah.
Don't know why. Just depends who was there, I think.
Yeah, I got told that on the coach as well. One guy was like, go right. And I got I just went left because I was filming and that was the better kind of place to film it all because that was more to the edge. And then I ended up actually just behind him, like one person behind him when the two steps met to go up
and
out of the Minac. Yeah, so I was like, well, that didn't work, did it? But at least he went right and he wasn't just giving me false information. But you went right and you placed yourself at the front. So then in that first bit where everyone's like running, over the coast path, I found that quite like hard work because usually on an ultra I just run at chatting pace, but my heart rate was at like 180 beats per minute on that bit. Were you quite, because you started at the front, were you then quite far near the front, were you queuing much there?
Yeah, no queuing, which was original plan. So that was, as much as I'm joking about the racing, my original plan was to be towards the front because I didn't want to have to queue on, there's plenty of single track in that first bit, and I didn't want to have to wait for people. As it was, I was running about 15th or 18th, something like that, for that first section. And still couldn't run exactly at my own rhythm.
Okay.
So I found that I could do downhills / the technical bits better than most people, even the really quick people who were definitely fitter than me. So we were yo-yoing for ages. Around about where Holly went past me. There was a group of three or four people and I would go past them on the downhill technical as they go past me on the uphill flats.
That was exactly the same for me, but just like a way back in the pack. Like, it's not that I'm particularly fast or anything, but on the technical stuff, I don't slow down like other people will slow down. So they'll slow down and then I massively slow down for the uphills and they all just come past me. And then I have to be like, excuse me again, like a massive idiot, like really annoying person. But I'm just looking at your stats on the open tracking, and you got to Senen in about an hour. So
I went way too fast. To your point about heart rate, my heart rate was 180s at the beginning. So like I said, I did intend to be at the front. I did intend to try and get ahead of people just to avoid that conga line. But I didn't intend to go that fast. And I was overheating massively. Interestingly, a couple of other people said to me as well, and other people stopped to take layers off or whatever. I started in shorts and one layer because I knew I was going to get generally hot anyway.
Yeah, me too.
But not as hot as I was.
Yeah, it was a
warm day. I don't know
if
it's just because the sun or whatever. Yeah, which is insane. That's such a British thing because it was 8 degrees or something.
Yeah, it was a warm day for January, wasn't it? And when you're running fast, I find that you only need shorts and T-shirt if you're running fast. I chose long leggings, but they were like ones that were quite breathable. So they were long, but they were okay. And then I had a long sleeve that you could just pull the sleeves up. And I was just running in that for basically all of the course until it got dark. But yeah, I'm just noticing that you took about an hour to get to Senen, which is a really great effort there. What did you do about, like, did you have a crew? Because I felt like when I got to Senen, I probably could have done with not taking 1 litre of water at the start if I'd have had someone at Senen there waiting just to give me a bottle. Did you have crew?
No crew for me. I carried 2 litres essentially every time I topped up.
Did you? 2 litres?
I do drink quite a lot, but it also meant that I could had the option to like skip stopping if I could. So I only filled up extra at around Pendine. I had an extra litre, and then St Ives, and then that's it actually.
So it doesn't...
So I was carrying extra, but I had more flexibility that way.
So you started off that start of the race, you had 2 litres of water with you.
And wow. I actually could have had more, to be honest, how hot I was
really?
At the beginning.
Because yeah. I only drank like 500 mils, but then I don't like sweat loads. And I probably wasn't going as fast as you, obviously.
I think I just sweat a lot.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's good to know, because I was going to advise everybody in like the 10 top tips that we're sort of creating here on the way. I'll ask you for three at the end. I thought that probably my advice to people would be to start with 500 mil and have a crew member meet you at like Land's End or Senen. And the great thing about having a crew would be they could literally hand you a bottle filled and you couldn't, yeah. you just wouldn't even have to stop. They could run alongside you. They could hand you the bottle. You could give them your empty bottle and just pop it in your pack.
Like
with us uncrewed people, we were having to like drink it all, like unscrew the top, hold it out to someone, wait there, screw it back up, put it back in, and then do the other one. So it would be a massive advantage, I think, to be crewed. Like if you're scraping the cutoffs like I was, it would be quite good to have someone there.
definitely in that scenario. And I think it has a double benefit because so where I can, I use just like liquid nutrition, so just like sugar in water. But you could use a Tailwind or whatever thing, but it's just easier to do or cheaper to do sugar. So if I had a crew, that's exactly what I would do. I would just have pre-filled bottles with pre-filled energy, and then that would be less things to carry in terms of gels, etc. So that would be nice too.
Yeah, I was gonna say to you then, next question was how much food did you carry? Because before I went, I was like, well, how many of these do I take with me? I took 8 of these in the end, and then 2 tuna sandwiches, 2 cheese sandwiches, and a hot cross bun and a piece of flapjack. And I didn't end up eating the cheese sandwiches or the flapjack or the hot cross bun. Maybe I would have if I'd have got through the cutoff. But I just feel like I took too much food, and there was actually more food out there than they sort of intimated that there might be.
Yeah, there definitely was. I tend not to use aid station stuff at all unless I like fancy something when I get there.
Yeah,
so I came from triathlons before ultra. Mm-hmm. And same story, there are aid stations available and people can get coke or gels or whatever, but I like to be self-sufficient.
Okay so I
think I had 14 gels plus 2 hours worth of fluid nutrition. That's it. Oh, and then a couple of flapjacks in case I wanted something
savory.
Solid.
Yeah.
So I was aiming for 80 grams of carbs an hour. Mm-hmm. At best, and I literally never ever managed to do that in ultras.
I don't either. I eat far less than I think I should.
Yeah, I had loads left over. I think I averaged 60 grams an hour.
Yeah. So what was that, like one gel an hour then? Were your gels like 60 gram gels?
They're 40 grams. They're the SAS beta fuel ones. So I think they're 40 grams per per gel. So it should have been one every half an hour.
Yes. Okay. One every half an hour. Because I find that really hard to eat. Like I was chomping on these, but there's only so many bar of any make of bar that you can chomp down all the time. But I was just like having mouthfuls of these. These are like 200 calories. In there, how many carbs?
50 grams.
Yeah, it says per bar 20 grams of carbs. So I should have been eating way more of these than I thought.
I find it hard to chew stuff though. Like, so I only had one of the two flapjacks that I took, which is just like breathing and running and eating. I just can't do it.
Yeah, and I also had poles. So I was like, at one point I had like a tuna sandwich in one hand and a pole and a GoPro and a pole in that hand. And it was just like, did you use poles as well?
No poles for me. I have not. So I do have some.
Yeah.
I've never really got onto the coordination of it.
Yeah.
So I don't use them. It's something I still need to practice with.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Get a bit of practice there with the poles. I found the poles really useful because there was a lot of balancing, wasn't there, over the rocks and bogs, especially that Pendeen to St Ives section. So I was grateful for them there. Did you at any point think, oh, I could have done with a pole over that really rocky section from Pendeen to
St Ives?
Think
so. I was using my hands so much. I don't know if I could.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe
know if
it was.
It would replace. Yeah, I think people who really know how to use them probably would benefit. But I would have just been, I'd have put them away and not used them, so.
Yeah, and just had to carry them, yeah. And so what were the high points of the race for you? Like, what were you really pleased about?
I was pleased with the beginning until later. So my original aim was to do, so like a really good day would have been 7:30 per kilometer average, which I think is like 9.5 hours. So that's like a really great day.
That is a good day out.
And I think I can tell you actually, I averaged 6:39 per kilometer before Cape Cornwall. So
wow,
that's way too fast.
Yeah.
But that's 20 kilometers or something. So I was like, wow, I actually must be fitter than I thought. This is fine. I only really slowed down because my Achilles started, both of them started complaining a bit at that point. I was like, okay, well, I'll slow down a bit, and then they calmed down. So that was fine. And so I thought, oh, well, I can easily come in at 7:30 then, even with a bit of slowing down. And I think that was probably on until about the last 15K, actually. So finishing, definitely, because, you know, it doesn't really matter about your goals. If you're doing something for the first time, then finishing is the goal. That's the reason that you're there.
Yeah.
So that is fantastic. I definitely lasted muscularly longer than I have before. So the 65K right at the end was a struggle.
Yeah.
Towards the end of UTS was a real struggle. Part of the heat, part of the muscles. So, and it was I got to 60, just over 65K this time without any significant fatigue or pain or anything like that. So
that's good.
Great. And I suppose the other thing is, this really felt like a troubleshooting. So like I said, those phases, those down phases, which are sort of fatigue, emotional kind of down phases, but also, like I said, the Achilles getting a bit funny, my hips went a bit funny at some point, and you have to troubleshoot that on the fly. That's kind of the main skill of ultra versus just running on the road. And I felt like I did that really well. Like, okay, well, this is just you need to dip or change your stride or slow down, or you haven't eaten enough or drunk enough. That troubleshooting process, I think, went really well, personally.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's good. So you felt like you got a bit more ultra experience in the bag, sort of thing. Yeah. And troubleshooting. And did you have any low points as well on the way round? Was there any particular place where you felt a bit despondent?
Yeah, definitely that bit that everyone talks about. Yeah, I just slowed down so much in the Pendine to St Ives bit.
That was my favourite bit. Like, everyone's like, oh, that's the worst bit. That was honestly my favourite bit. I loved it.
It's so pretty.
Great. Yeah, and it's beautiful. All the terrain was great. The bit I hated was that bit through Hale where there was like 4 miles of road. I was slow on that because it's so boring.
It is. Fortunately, so I got kind of entertained through that section because that's kind of where I caught up with the most of the 100-milers.
Oh, wow. You caught up with some hundreds.
So I got to have small conversations with them on the way through that section. Mostly them going, oh, how your running's, how I think I look. But
yeah.
So that wasn't too bad, although that is dull, that section. It's so pretty. But I also kind of did the low point to myself because I thought, oh, Zenna must be just there.
Yeah.
And then it was always a lot longer than so I was like, oh, they must be around the next headland. Oh, it's not. Next headland, no, it's still not there. Oh, you're an hour away from it still.
Yeah.
Because when I did my recce, I'd done it in 10-mile stretches or less.
Yeah.
I'd shortened it in my mind about how close everything was.
Yeah.
And partly that was, that was a low point for me just for, I was tired having done too long, too fast.
Yes, that point, and it's tricky terrain. And yeah, Zenna takes ages to come to. So if anyone hasn't done the races, there's the Pendine cutoff, which you have to get to at 12:30, which Sean went through at 11:14, which is brilliant. I went through it like, I think 12:20.
Oh, perfect.
Just made it. Yeah, just made it. And then Zenna comes next before St Ives, and it's kind of like nearly 2 hours to there, isn't it? And there's just endless hill after hill. And then to get to the actual kind of place where the crews can meet you is like this horrible set of steps. You'll see it in my film where I'm just like, oh, steps. And there's like a granny rail as well that you can pull yourself up on.
And inevitably, like supporters always stand at the top of hills when you're feeling yeah, you're looking the worst. Every time, every type of race, it's funny.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly there. That Zenna was a tricky one to get to. Then it was all downhill to St Ives. Before we try and get extract a sort of a top three tips from you for anybody else that wants to do the race, can we just cover your typical training week in a massive nutshell? Because I know we've only got about 10 minutes of you left.
So I'm sort of very dull. So I'm self-coached and I just slowly increment everything. Mm-hmm. It's really dull. So I do a little bit of periodization where I think, okay, well, right now I'm working on 10K pace or 5K pace. And then I just do slightly more volume or slightly more of a percentage of that intensity every week. So I'm up to about 120K as my highest weekly volume. But that will vary kind of based on life logistics and how close I'm getting towards the end of a block. And yeah, so I'll just do, I don't know, like three by a mile, say. And then the next week I'll do four by a mile and five. So just,
well, like
I just
sprinting.
Do really, yeah. So that would be like that 5K block, for example.
Yeah. And would that be up a hill, like the 3 by 1 mile?
I live in the lakes, everything's up a hill.
Okay, yes. So you're in the lakes. You're massively advantaged there.
Yeah, massively so. So yeah, so it's really simple like that. So just trying to be consistent and slowly increment everything. Yeah. I do always do my long runs on trails, and then probably half of the week is road, just because it's quicker. Okay. I can just leave my door, run, and then come back. So that's it. Yeah, it's pretty simple, really. Oh. I think that consistency is the key, and I'm trying to do as much strength / mobility stuff as I can.
But I was just gonna
always
ask
inevitably is the first thing that gets dropped, isn't it? Like, oh, I've got an hour, should I run or should I do mobility? I'll run then.
Yeah, definitely. So is that like what, 5 runs a week for you then, that mileage?
6. I take Mondays off.
Oh wow! So you run every day.
So I do normally long run on a Saturday. Yeah.
And so when would you do your strength work in that? Would that be on the day off, or is your day off an actual day off?
No, actual day off. Always on a day that I'm doing something else hard. So if it's a speed day or a long run day, I'll do the strength stuff. And then if it's like a rest day or a recovery day, I treat them like actual rest and recovery and don't do hard lifting type stuff.
That's really good, because if you're going to go hard, and if you're going to rest, you rest. Yeah, so you're like
basically like whenever you off. I think of it as whenever you're like giving the body a burden of thing of like recovery to do, don't interrupt that. So just pile everything on at the same time, as long as you're not too sore to do your next activity or doing too much.
And if you were to do the strength and the hard session, like the interval session in the same day, which do you do first, the strength work or the interval work?
Interval work, definitely. Okay. And then, which is probably why I then deprioritize the strength.
Yeah.
No, I don't know, actually, because, so yes, I do always do it that way around, in sort of, because then at least your muscles are warm, etc. But if the strength work is taking enough out of you that your lifting form might be compromised, then probably I would do it the other way around. I never do anything that hard. So basically everything I do is about 80% difficult.
Yeah.
Always have 2 reps left and I could do more. So I'm not putting myself in a hole enough for it to be a problem.
Yeah. Because if you're running 6 days a week, you don't want to knock yourself out for that the next day, even if it's just a recovery run. It sounds like good training. So in terms of other people coming to the race and wanting to get through first time like you did, can you kind of give us just kind of 3 top tips for them that you would really recommend? It could be to do with training or like nutrition or gear or like how strategy for the race. Can you think of sort of 3 things?
So for this race specifically or just all races?
Yeah, for the ARC 50.
So definitely recce.
You reckon? That was really important.
Yeah, because the Southwest Coast Path, so less so the 50, definitely the 100.
Oh,
because the bit until you get to the Minnick, there's lots of like very tight single track with like a bit like the Pendine section, mm-hmm. but more regular interruption or stride length and things, because it's just rocks, etc.
Yeah.
So I think you need to get used to that idea. And also, it just doesn't feel like there's many other places in the country where the weather's so like not changeable is not the right word, but like can be against you, like literally running into a headwind or whatever.
Yeah, so you sort of need to go there and experience it and then go back to your training and go, how can I replicate this in my own area?
Yeah,
and also just have it mentally in your mind, like I am going for this. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then when you come across in your local trails or whatever something that's semi-similar, you can then approach it like, okay, imagine this was the race.
Yeah.
How do I pick a line through this set of rocks or etc.?
And if you only had, say, like, I know you spent the whole summer there wrecking that whole 100 course, which sounds fantastic. If you're like me and you can only like maybe spare one weekend to recce one bit of the 50, like say a 10 mile section or something like that, is there a particular part that you think, no, this is the part you need to recce?
So definitely that Pendeen to St. Ives section.
Yeah, okay.
Because, like you said, so once you get to St. Ives and onwards, that's largely flattish road, well-packed trail, the same after.
Yeah.
Maybe the dunes. I think you just make it through the dunes. I don't think you need to have seen that before.
Yeah. I don't know how much impact a recce would have in the dunes if it's dark. And, yeah, I think you just maybe need to go and recce that to get used to following your watch or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, following other people, putting some faith in someone. Yeah, yeah. I think in terms of a difference to just normal running, that Pendeen plus section is the way to go.
Yeah, that's interesting that you said that because, like, I found that bit fine. Like, that was great. So I would recommend reccing that if you haven't got a lot of experience of technical running and stuff like that. But for me, if you're, like, more of a back-of-the-pack runner, like, coming in at, like, 15 hours kind of thing, I would recce the section where it starts to get dark. So, like, after St. Ives, it started to get dark for me. And there was, like, that crisscross of the railway. Like, you crisscrossed it, like, three times, and I had to stop quite a few times to, like, look at the OS map app and just be like, well, where am I going now? And that cost time as well. So I'd recce that section after St. Ives and then the through Hale so that you can just bomb through there. And then I'd recce the dunes just to get into your, because that Godavery cutoff is really like the biggie, isn't it? Like after Godavery, you could like kind of chill out, sort of, but you know that like you've got to get there, haven't you? So I would recce the dunes as well so that I just knew what I was going to be up against because I was getting lost in there and I really didn't have any time to be lost in there or to slow down. So to just know what you were looking for, those big headstone type things with the acorn on and just have a bit of an idea. So I'd go for that bit to recce.
That's a really good point, actually, because I'm thinking about it like because I already knew. I didn't look at navigation at all from St. Ives until the dunes, just in the dunes. I didn't look at it because I'd already done
you knew it.
The whole thing.
Yeah,
well, that would be really, really helpful, good. Actually. And that was light for me. It didn't get dark until after Godavery.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so it depends like how fast you think you're going to be to which bit you recce. So that's interesting, like both sides of there. So that's one.
So that probably leads on to number two, actually.
Yeah.
Practice with your head torch.
Okay, yeah.
So partly because just get used to being able to see not that much. But number two, just getting used to what the controls of your particular head torch are.
Yeah.
So I had Phoenix something or other, and it has like a spotlight mode and a floodlight mode, and they have different intensities. And if I hadn't used it in runs all through the winter, I wouldn't have known like, oh, is this just as good as it gets? Or would it be better to flip at this point? And how long it'll last and all those bits and pieces. Yeah, I think that's very important to understand, like, what's it like at night? Does that affect your pace? Or are there other things you have to look for? Or do you need to, like, have some caffeine to be able to pay attention to things? I think that's a good thing to practice as well.
Yeah, definitely. So recce, number one, head torch controls and usage.
Nighttime, yeah.
Nighttime running. Number three.
I think it's really boring, but consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It's significantly better to just do like 10K every day than go and do some amazing 3x5 kilometer workout and then have to take 2 days off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just don't try to like overdo intensity or rush getting quick.
Okay.
Just put some time in running.
Yeah. Run, and run some more. I think that's really good that you've said that, though, because sometimes I'll be put off a workout because I think, oh, right, I know I've got to go and, like, do, like, 2 minutes of hard stuff and rest, like, 3x2 minutes intervals. And I find that a bit off-putting, so then sometimes I just won't do it at all. So thinking to yourself, just whatever you do, just get out. And if you can do that session, then great. Or if you can do a lower intensity version of that session, then that's just as good. And it's better than not going out.
Totally. There's one guy that I coach, and the message that I give to him is, if you don't feel like doing it, that might be legitimate. Mm-hmm. Put your stuff on and go outside. If you go outside and just do a 20-minute walk, great. that's better than just sitting on the sofa. And if you then, when you go out, think, oh, actually, it's not too bad, I could do a little bit of a run, that's fantastic. But just going and doing something is much better.
Yeah.
That's the reason most of us started doing, I know ultras is a bit of a crazy endeavor, but most of us just started, oh, it'd be nice to be a bit fitter. So there's no reason not to just embrace that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, I like those top three tips, Sean. Thank you very much.
It's easier going first because nothing's taken.
Yeah. I've got like 8 written just in case. we've got to finish with you soon because you've got to get back to work. But what is next for you? Just fill us in.
I have a bit of a ridiculous season this year. So next is Manchester Marathon. So I'm hoping, but this is quite a stretch goal, to get a London Good for Age qualifying time.
Awesome.
But it's difficult because it's sub-3 in theory, but in reality, they normally take time off of that time. Okay. So I probably need to do more like 2:54, which would be a 20-minute PB. So that's... we'll see.
Yeah, as a stretch. Maybe just wait until you're a bit older and then the Good for Age
the time gets up. Well, that's the goal is to do it before I hit 35. I think 35 is when it changes. So the goal is to try and do it before the age group thing moves. Oh, so I can't just wait.
That's an amazing goal.
I'll see if we get there. But ultras wise, I'm doing UTS again. And then Mozart 100, which is in Austria. So 105K. And CCC.
Wow. Yeah. So going long, yes. Yeah. And doing some alpine stuff.
I had intended to do the Ridgeway Challenge, but it got cancelled, unfortunately.
Oh, it has?
So hence CCC, yeah.
Oh, Tim did that last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was
supposed to be the British Championships or whatever the Trail Running Association calls it. But there wasn't enough interest, so it got cancelled, sadly.
Oh, that's a shame. Oh. Oh. Oh, well.
But I'd rather have kept it, yeah, in the UK if possible.
Yeah, that would have been really nice. Well, there is like a World Champion Series being set up, isn't there, with the guys from Centurion Running being quite involved with that. So yeah. That'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah, it's a possible next year thing for me to move to 100, but it seems such a crazy long distance.
Yeah, but I think like with your sort of background and your pedigree, like maybe if you just slowed down a little bit, you'd find it
really
easy.
That's the problem, isn't it?
If you just went at my pace, maybe we should run together for the first bit and you can run at my pace and then at 50 miles, I'll stop and you can continue.
Yeah, or maybe the opposite. I'll do the 100 when you do the 50, catch you up at Minnick and then you can stop me overdoing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You could have a little sleep waiting for me. Awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much, Sean. It's been really great to catch up with you. It was lovely to see you at the race as well. And congratulations for completing the arc on your first attempt and your first 50 miler. And good luck with all your ultras this year.
Thanks.
We're going to say bye to Sean now. So bye, Sean. And we'll catch up with Christian. So I'm going to... Yes. What do I need to do? I need to go on Skype. Where's Skype gone? Here we go. So Sean's gone now, and where's Skype gone? Skype is here, so we'll just ring Christian now. Let me just press the video button, and we'll say hi to Christian, who also completed the arc on his first.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attempt this year. Hi, Christian. How are you doing?
Hi. Not too bad.
Awesome. We'll just wait for your image to come up on the screen.
Oh, that's... maybe I need to turn my camera on.
Oh, yeah. There's always that. So I will just tell everybody about your arc. So Christian did the arc in 14 hours, 26 minutes. There you are. And 20 seconds. And just while we were just chatting on the Skype little chat thing earlier, he said he was also thinking now of doing the 100. So this is going to be an interesting chat with Christian here. Can I just get you to move a little bit to your left so that you're in the middle of the screen there, Christian? Yes.
That's it.
Yes, that's good. Yes. Yeah, so I've also just worked out, having seen your picture on the Skype thing, that I did actually meet you before we set off at about 5 o'clock in the morning, and we were having a chat, weren't we? So I'm really sorry that I didn't put two and two together. You were wearing a Wild Ginger Running buff, so I was like, oh, hi, I'm going to film you. You're wearing a Wild Ginger Running buff, but I didn't actually put two and two together to think that you were actually Christian. So sorry about that.
It was very early in the morning.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yep. I need to change your name as well. Sean's just put on the live chat that I need to change your name to Christian. I've got like a little name. I had Sean O'Keefe on top of Sean O'Keefe, and now we're going to change it to Christian. What a smooth changeover this is. I hope everybody on the podcast is enjoying this smooth changeover. Okay, right, we're all set up now. So thanks so much to Sean for coming on. He's now in the live chat and he's going to be heckling us with some questions probably. So Christian, congratulations on your ARC 50, 14 hours and a half basically. Let's just hear, what is your previous race experience first of all? What led you to the ARC?
Ah, well, funny enough, it's very similar to Sean. I entered last year, put on the waiting list, and it was kind of, I don't know, I just entered it because a friend of mine had done it, and I thought, never expecting to run it. And it was only later in the year, I think late October, that I got notification that I was in. I thought, oh, blimey, I better start training for this. But it wasn't planned at all. Fantastic, I got a place and it's a fantastic run, and so pleased I managed to do it, but it certainly wasn't planned.
Yeah, it wasn't planned. Well, all you people with unplanned ARC 50 finishes, and my DNF, even though it was planned for quite some time, it's not fair. So we need to pump you for tips, Christian. By the end of this, we're going to have to come up with three tips from you, and then I'm going to continue with the last four tips at the end. Did you do any recces or anything? Where are you based?
No, that was the thing. I'm based in London. So it's a long way to travel down. And because I only found out I had a place in October, I couldn't spare the time to go down there for any recces. And to tell you the truth, I underestimated the course. The section from Pendeen to St Ives, I really didn't expect. And that caught me out somewhat.
When
I got to St Ives, I felt awful. I wasn't thinking of pulling out, but I could have stayed in that lovely hall for quite a long time eating.
I'm just going to have a look at your stats and see when you got into St Ives. So you got into St Ives 7.5 hours into the race, which is, I can't work that out. What kind of time did you hit St Ives then?
It was late afternoon. I did chat to one of the marshals there, and he said, you're fine for cutoffs, that's not a problem.
The cutoff at St Ives was 5 o'clock.
Yeah, so I left St Ives and it was just starting to get dark, so I put my head torch on, and I from then onwards I had to run in the dark.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So that's similar to me then. I must have been a bit behind you because I left about 5:10.
Yeah, I don't think you were that far behind. I did pass you before we met.
Did you?
I think it's just before Pendeen, actually. I passed you, but I wasn't going much quicker.
Yeah. Oh, just before Pendeen. Okay, cool. Oh, I must have been not paying attention at all. There were so many people passing me, though, wasn't there? Left, right and centre. Graham Melthold says, how many other ultras have you done, Christian?
I've only started doing ultras in the last year or so, but I've packed them in. I did UTS last year.
Yeah, the 50K.
That's right. And I've packed quite a few in. I did the Chiltern Wonderland to get up to 50. I've done the Glasgow to Edinburgh to get a bit of extra mileage in my legs through that. I've done a round London 55K, round Reading, which was 50K. So lots of 50s.
Yeah, lots of 50Ks.
I've also done the Eco Trail in Paris last year, which was 45K. And that kind of really got me excited in doing ultras.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked back since then. I come from a sort of marathon background, so I'm used to doing the longer stuff, but obviously ultras is something different.
Yeah, bit longer, bit slower.
Yeah, some people. And on trail, which is fantastic, which I much prefer to road.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant that we've sort of come over to the dark side there. So I'm interested with your living in London, especially what your typical training week looks like, because obviously Sean went down, he lived there for the summer and he recce'd the entire 100 course. That sounds like absolutely brilliant if you can do it.
I wished I could.
Yeah. But what's your training in London?
It's very boring. Because I've got limited time, I can't really travel too far. So basically, I train as I would for a marathon. So on a Tuesday, I go to the track and do track sessions. Thursday, it's either tempo or actually we do hills, all on road, but we do hill systems. Saturday, it's usually racing. This time of year, it's cross country. Mm-hmm. And on a Sunday, it's a long run.
But
it's all on roads and very much like I would have done for marathon training.
Yeah.
But then I try and fit in as many races as I can and travel outside of London. I've been doing quite a bit of fell racing over the past 5 or 6 years. So I've been going to the mountains and doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I enter ultras and that's my training, basically.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So a lot of your training is those...
Racing, basically.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of fell runs as well. And so does that involve you sort of like finishing work at 5 on a Friday and like leaping in the car, driving to somewhere in the lakes? You've booked accommodation
Very
there.
Very much. Yeah, that's basically what it is. And then back on a Sunday, ready for work on Monday.
Yeah. And do you have a family then that you're abandoning for this weekend or like weekends away? Or like how do you make it work logistically? Because it's quite a lot to plan, isn't it?
It is. I've got a very understanding wife, but no children, luckily, which helps massively.
Yeah. Yeah. Does your wife come too then? Is she into running?
No, not really. She does a bit of running, but just jogging, and she's not competitive at all, unlike me. So, she stays in London and I go off and do my thing and then come back covered in mud on a Sunday.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, that's brilliant. And so that's your week of training. And so...
It does, it does vary a little bit depending on what phase I'm in. And I think what's really important, I think Sean picked up on this, is I do a lot of strength work. So I go to the gym at least twice a week.
Okay.
Because I think it's certainly with the ultras, it's so important to have a strong core, strong legs.
Yeah.
And I've found that's helped me out in a lot of situations where you're flagging, but because you've got the strength, you can carry on.
And what sort of exercises are you doing there in the gym? Are you doing the classes or are you doing a specific set of exercises?
Yeah, I tend to do classes now just because you don't have to think too hard.
Yeah.
I used to do stuff on my own, but you have to pre-plan it, and I find a class is just a lot easier. You can switch off, enjoy yourself for 45 minutes, an hour, and then you're done.
Yeah, and it's someone shouting at you like, do this, do that.
Right.
Like, is it like body pump and that kind of thing?
Exactly.
You know, like with the weights on your shoulders.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So it's high reps but low weights.
Okay.
So you don't. I don't want to bulk up, but it's just to keep me in tone and shape. And I find the lighter weight with high reps helps. It kind of equates quite well to
endurance.
Running.
Yeah, it's endurance, isn't it? It's not like strength should be like really heavy weights and like 6 to 8 reps, shouldn't it? But
that's right.
Yeah. And so that training sounds like a really good basis for all of that and your previous ultra experience as well. You were really comfortably within all of the cutoffs. How did you find the race?
I really enjoyed it. It was tough. It was tougher than I thought it would be. I had in my mind before I started, just looking at the previous year's results, maybe I could do between 13 and 14 hours. About right. I was half an hour over that. And that's purely because I think I underestimated the course. That pending to St Ives bit, I slowed down terribly. Yeah. I did bring poles, but for some reason I didn't really use it on that section, which should have done.
Yeah.
I guess because it wasn't, it was so undulating, you didn't want to keep putting your poles back again, you know.
Because sometimes you have to get your hands, use your hands, didn't you? I found I was holding both poles in one hand and using one hand with the other.
Exactly, yeah. But you made a good point. It does aid stability. And in a lot of sections where I was feeling a bit unsteady on my feet, later on in the race, when I was using poles more, they helped a lot. So I think hopefully when I do it again, I will be using the poles more.
Yes. So you want to do it again then?
Yeah, I had to finish as we were coming in across the line. There's a guy with a video camera and he shoved a microphone in my face. And I was all a bit sort of addled. And he said, "How did I do?" And I said, "Yeah, fine." And he mentioned something about, "Oh, you're going to come back and do it again?" And I just blurted out, "Yes, I'm going to do the 100. And then I'm thinking, "Oh, I'm on camera. I can't back down now."
Have you done 100 before then? I didn't hear you mention 100 in the things you've done before.
No, I've got one plan for later this year. I'm doing the Centurion Autumn 100.
Oh, right. Is that the Autumn 100? Is that the one that is in a cross shape and you go out and back, out and back, out and back, which sounds like the devil incarnate? That sounds like horrendous. It sounds completely different to the Southwest Coast Path, though.
It does. I think now I've done the 50, I at least know what to expect. So yeah. I think it's within me. And I always like to aim high. I tend to do this for a lot of races. I enter them thinking, "Oh, my God, you know, it scares me to hell that I've just entered something." But I've always managed to somehow get through. So, it's a bit like the UTS. When I first entered that, it scared the living daylights out of me. But I got round okay, so.
Yeah, you got round okay and you did it. And you did in 14 and a half hours for the 50. You're well within that cutoff time. So, you know, add 50 miles onto there and you hopefully still be within the cutoff.
Exactly. I'm going to give it a go. I think if you don't push yourself, you know, you regret it in the end if you don't take the challenge. And I feel like with training, I've got quite a few ultras lined up this year, so I should be in a fairly good shape next year.
Yeah, and with all that strength work, hopefully you won't get injured as well.
Yeah, that's one of the downsides, but I've been very careful and touch wood, I haven't been injured for a while. So it's just knowing your limits, and I think getting the recoveries in are so important. I do try and have one or two days off from running. It's so tempting just to go out, but I try now just listen to my body. And as I'm getting older as well, I find my recoveries are longer.
Yes, I'm finding that too. Yeah. Yeah. And did you have a crew on the race?
No, I was self-supported, which was fine. Again, with Lachon, I carried 2 litres of water with me, which was about right.
Yeah.
It was heavy, but I felt more confidence because I didn't have to worry. Actually, there's lots of archangels around.
Yeah.
So I could have carried less water, but at the time I didn't realise.
I think a litre is fine, yeah.
Yeah, but I had the confidence that, no, I've got enough water, I can do this.
Yeah.
I filled up fully at St Ives and just topped up from St Ives to the finish. And I actually drank all the water by the time we finished, so it was about right.
Yeah, so how did you carry that then? Because I carried a litre, just had 500 here, 500 there on my front pockets. Did you also have a bladder in the back with a litre there?
I did, yeah. So I had the 2 flasks, one with Tailwind, one with water just flavoured with some cordial.
Yeah.
So it helps to drink. I mean, I had just pure water in the bladder, which was almost an emergency supply, which I did actually need, so I'm glad I bought that.
Ah, that's interesting, because I was going to suggest to people to take less water, but it seems like perhaps, like, if you sweat more, or, you know, if you're a certain type of person, like, I don't know, maybe, I just didn't drink as much, but I just carried a litre, and then the most, I did get to the end of that during the Pendine to St Ives section, so I just filled up fully at St Ives. But yeah, I suppose you just have to know yourself whether you drink a lot or whether you sweat a lot.
Yeah, I was getting quite hot. I mean, it was a relatively warm day, and I was layered up, probably wearing too many layers actually, but I did find a night section. It did get cold, so I was glad I did have the layers on. But initially, yeah, it was pretty warm. And you don't want to stop and take layers off. That's the problem.
No, you don't want to stop at all, do you?
No.
And so we've covered your water. How much food did you carry then? Because you weren't crewed. So,
again,
how did you make those decisions?
Yeah, I probably carried too much, but I based it on roughly 40 grams of carbs I take every 45 minutes. And I had a mixture of gels, energy bars, and my secret weapon is Baby Bell cheeses, which I've only just started using. And towards the end of an ultra, it's one of the few things I can actually palate. And it really does make a difference now.
Oh, that sounds really nice because it's kind of salty, savoury, obviously,
exactly,
really easy to get down.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering now, do you pre-peel them and put them in a bag, or do you have to faff around with all that stuff and then have a load of litter to carry around with you?
No, I kind of faff around, but it's easy enough. Once you get your fingernail in, it's easy to open them.
Yeah, I think I would pre-open them and put them in a bag and leave them to sweat, you know?
Yeah, maybe I'll try that next time.
Yeah, so do you feel that you carried too much food or too little?
I probably did slightly too much. Again, I didn't realise that the Archangels were, I mean, they're fantastic. They had vans here with food and water. Yeah. So I did grab a few things from them. I had planned on being completely self-sufficient and only stopping at St Ives. So I had a few gels left over at the end.
Yeah, it's good to have a few bits left over. You want some emergency there, don't you? What were your high points during the race?
The scenery was just mind-blowing. Although I felt awful going on that section from Pantin to St Ives, the scenery buoyed you up and kept me going. It was just brilliant. I kept wanting to stop and take photos, but
I know, yeah, that's why I got timed out. Oh, taking photos, making a film.
But I think some of the high points, just meeting fellow runners. After St Ives, I had a bit of a navigational issue with my watch. I lost the GPX.
Oh, no.
And I managed to team up with another runner who happened to be at roughly the same pace as me. And we ended up actually with a small group of two or three other runners who all had navigation issues. And we ran through the dunes together, which was great because morally we weren't alone.
Yeah, I had, there was a group of four ladies running through the dunes together, and we knew that we were probably definitely not going to make that cut off. We were all caning it through these dunes, but we just kept going wrong because it was like, oh, is it this way, and then one person's watch would be like, oh no, this way, and so we'd all kind of like collaborate together, and we eventually got there, but we lost a good 15 minutes in that.
There's so many different choices on the dunes. I mean, we had GPX, but again, when you're there, you're not quite sure which, it's pointing in that direction, but is it that path or that path?
Yeah, it's really tricky, isn't it? I would recce that bit. Would you, like, having done the 50, would you advise to recce any particular path?
I would. I wished I had. Certainly the Pendine to St Ives, I didn't expect it to be so technical, and I would have liked to have recced that.
Yeah.
The dunes, possibly, but I don't know. Would I have done it at night? Probably not. So I think it's a different beast at night.
Yeah, I think you just have to make sure you have enough time to get lost a few times in the dunes. I think that's why there was a guy on the coach who was really helpful. He said, make sure you're leaving St Ives, aim for St Ives at 4:30 and don't hang around there. Don't hang around because you're allowed to get there at 5 and the latest you can leave is 5:19. And I think I left at like 5:10 or something ridiculous. So I should have just been in and out of there. But I was just stopped by a hot cup of tea and going to the loo. And then I was like, looked at my phone and my friend had put a scan picture up of they were having a baby. So then I had to message her back. And I was like, you shouldn't be doing this, Claire.
that's my second top tip, actually, is don't spend too long at St Ives.
It's so
tempting when you sit down in a warm environment, and I had a plate of baked beans on toast and I could have stayed there all day.
Yes. Yeah. And the thing is with St. Ives, you're only just over halfway at that point. It's like 26 miles or 27 miles or something like that. And it really is, you have got a long way to go at that point. And you haven't seen any sort of proper checkpoints until then, because it's the only one on the 50. So it is hard.
Yeah, I definitely made a conscious choice to be as quick as I could. So I ordered some food, ate that, filled my flasks, went to the toilet, and then thought, right, this is it. Got to get out. Stay here any longer.
I'm going to check what time you left St. Ives. Oh, it doesn't say the time here. It just says the cumulative time. So it says you were out of St. Ives at 7 hours 21. So that's 8:30, 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1:30, 2:30, 4:00. So just before 4 you left.
That's right, yeah. So it was, yeah, the sun was setting at that point. So I did put my head torch on in anticipation that it's going to get dark, and it did once we got out St. Ives.
Yeah. And did you have any low points on the race?
Yes, I think it was the point out of St. Ives when my watch played up. And I thought, oh my God, I don't know where I'm going. And I had the OS maps on my phone, so yeah, I wasn't in a total distress, but that's not quite the same. And I didn't want to run with my phone in my hand. So I had a bit of a low point then, thinking, oh God, I'm only halfway and I don't know where I'm going. And then lucky I picked up this other runner, and we formed a little group, and that worked so well. And I was so pleased that I managed to find someone else. If I hadn't, I think I may have struggled a bit. I would have been a lot slower, mm-hmm. Just because navigating on a phone is not quite the same as running. And at least a watch kind of beeps at you and tells you where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a problem with the route just after St. Ives, because you go along following the sea, don't you? And then there's that railway that you have to sort of cross or not cross and cross.
That's right.
Do that three times in total. So I found that my watch, because I was using poles, it was sideways. So when I was looking at it, it wasn't quite like on where it wasn't quite right. And so it would kind of direct me that way. And then I had to get the OS map out at that point as well, on my phone, on the app, and then have a look at it there. And yeah, I had a bit of a low point there, because I really didn't have time to get lost at all. And I was just like, at that point, I thought, I don't know if I'm going to make it to Godeverey, and I had to stop filming and just like actually concentrate on getting there. So yeah, it's interesting that that was the same for you.
Yeah, exactly. I got confused. I think my watch wasn't at fault. I think I just pressed too many buttons and I lost the GPX. And the stress of the race, I didn't know how to get it back.
And did you eventually get it back then?
I didn't, no. In the end, I just, because we were in a little group, I just followed the leader, so to speak.
Yeah. And just hope they're going the right way.
I did look at my watch subsequently, and I now know how to use it. So that might be a second tip, is learn how to use your equipment before you...
Yeah. Yeah, learn how to use it in anger. Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, that's my second tip, actually, is with the headlight. I ran out of batteries just on the last hill going up to the finish.
Yeah.
My head torch just went. Mm-hmm. And my batteries were in the bottom of my pack.
Oh, no.
So a tip is, if your spare batteries, keep them somewhere handy.
Yeah, spare batteries handy. What was your first tip?
So the last 800 metres I ran in total blackness, which wasn't great.
Up that hill with the little flags on it. Yeah. So it's
luckily
a really cruel finish, isn't it?
So I kind of knew where I was going, but it wasn't particularly nice.
Yeah. I recce'd that the day before, just so that I knew, like, if I was getting there, you know, like with seconds to spare, I was like, I must know where I'm going. I'm not going to be stressed at this point. And you go through Porthtown, don't you? And you take
a
left and then an immediate right. And then there's flags and you hop onto the verge and then you cross a little tiny little ditch thing. And you're going up sideways up this huge, massively steep hill with all the little yellow flags up to the finish. That's such a cruel finish, isn't it? How were your legs on that?
Exhausted. I must admit, I had my poles out and I was just using them to work up the hill, which was great. I'm so pleased I actually brought poles.
So
I wasn't sure, because it wasn't that sort of... If I was in the mountains, I'd bring poles, but for a coastal path, generally I wouldn't. But I'm pleased I did on this one.
Yeah, I'm pleased I did as well, because I mainly use poles and I just find them so helpful on the uphills.
Yeah.
So just remind me what your first tip was, because that second tip is the spare batteries, keep them handy. What was the first tip that you did mention?
Oh, what was it? It was...
Was it?
Don't spend too long in St. Ives.
Oh, yeah, don't spend too long.
Or aid stations. Don't sit down.
Yeah.
Or you can sit down, but don't spend too long.
Yeah, beware the chair.
Yeah.
It's so true. Yeah. Beware the baked beans on toast as well. So we need a third tip from you, and then we will find out what you're doing for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, we've already had the recce bit. I would recommend someone does actually have a look at the course, but we've already had that. So third tip. I think for me, it's not for everyone, but I would say bring poles, because I found them really beneficial. And towards the end, when I was fatiguing,
yeah,
it did help.
Yeah. So maybe if you are crewed, or if you can get a crew to take poles to, say, St. Ives, or
even
Cadeverry, have someone meet you with poles at Cadeverry or something like that, just for that last bit, if you're not used to poles.
That's right. And in fact, I was with some other runners who did exactly that. Their crew had some poles ready for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, I think having a crew would make the whole race a lot easier, because you wouldn't have to carry as much. You'd be really quick with the bottle changes over with the water and the hydration. And you could do stuff like, you know, give them an extra layer, or, you know, if you found that you really weren't eating those cheese sandwiches, you could just ditch them. So it would actually be really handy to have a crew and get the poles, collect poles.
If you can have a crew, it's beneficial. Although I did quite like the challenge of being self-supported.
Yeah, I do like that as well. But I just had no idea how much food to take and how much water I'd need. So I feel like doing it once and getting timed out, I've now got a much better idea of what I would need, perhaps.
Likewise. I mean, I kind of just use a rule of thumb about food. I could probably have done... Certainly, I could have carried less because of the angels being around.
Yeah, but then... They're not necessarily there, are they?
That's
the other thing. If they get called to an emergency, they might just not be there. So I feel like you've always got to carry that food just in case.
Exactly. I think probably I would. It wasn't overly heavy, so I could just about fit it in my pack.
Yeah. And so you're going to sign up for the 100. When does it open?
1st of March.
Okay, not long.
No.
Yeah. You're definitely going to sign up.
I'm determined now. I've mulled it over and I'm committed, so I'm definitely going to sign up for it.
Yeah. And so, did we already cover what you're up to? You said the Autumn 100 as well, didn't you?
I'm doing the Eco Trail in Paris again, but I'm going for the 80 this year.
Okay.
Slightly longer.
Yeah.
And I've also signed up, again, it's one of these mad things where you just do it on the spur of the moment. I've signed up for the Dragon's Back.
Oh my
in September.
Goodness. I like you, Christian. You're a man of the same spirit as me, only slightly more bonkers. You're going to do the Dragon's Back. That's even bigger. I feel like that's even harder than everything else that you're doing put together. That's brilliant.
Well, we'll see how it goes. I've done one multi-day event already, the Druids. So a rough idea what's in. And I've done a lot of racing around, as well as the UTS, I've done a lot of fell racing around Snowdonia and the Brecon Beacons, Black Mountain. So I know the area quite well.
Yes, yeah.
I don't need to wreck it because I've already done it. So that's one benefit. I've just got to get fit enough to be able to keep going for six days.
Yeah, I know. I just can't believe that first day is like the Welsh 3000ers, 40 odd miles, loads of ascent. And it's just like, that's just good for one day out. And then you've got five more. I just don't know how you come back from that. But that sounds amazing.
I'll let you know in September.
Yeah, well, also, another patron, Lloyd Watkin, is doing it as well. He says, yay, Christian, see you in Conway. That's brilliant. We'll have to have both of you on after that to get your experiences, because I've got like an affinity for the Dragon's Back race, because I'm good friends with the organiser, Shane, and I remember when he first brought it back in 2012, after that first race was run in 1992, and he resurrected the race, and I went to cover it for Trail Running Magazine, and since then, I've just always had this kind of like, it just seems like a great route, but I think I'd probably do it like over a weekend at a time as a like a year-long project. But it sounds great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it now. It terrifies me, but then that's one of the reasons I'm doing it.
Yeah, and even if you find it too difficult, you can always like drop down to the hatchling course,
that's
can't
right.
you? So it's not like you've missed out on, like, you know, lost all your money or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a good idea. Because that is a worry that, you know, for whatever reason, you might not be able to quite do it, but you're not out of the race immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, well, that sounds brilliant. I'm very excited for your year ahead. But I'm aware that we've only given people 6 tips for the ARC 50. So I'm just going to add mine, if you don't mind, and I'll run them past you, see what you think. So I think people should be doing at least 1 hill rep or interval session per week. So
yeah,
getting used to those uphills.
Hills are so important. Even if it's like me on the road, it just makes all the difference. I felt strong going uphill, actually, purely because I've been doing hills in London.
Yeah.
So you can do hills on a treadmill. You know, you don't have to be outside, but definitely do some hill work.
Yeah, even on roads. Like, it's probably better to do them on roads, especially in the winter in training for the ARC, because otherwise you're going to be, like, messing around so much trying to get your foot placement on, like, trails that you're not going to get that power and that actual training. So I think do it on roads is absolutely fine. Yeah. My other tip is train on rough ground, but I think we kind of covered that, and that kind of like is a given. If you can't recce it, especially, you've got to go and train on rough ground.
Exactly.
Yeah. One tip for me, from me personally, was don't eat loads of cake over Christmas. I put on about 4 kilograms, like around, like, I don't know, since my last 50 miler and over Christmas, because my friend made me this amazing chocolate cake, so I was having a piece of chocolate cake or two every day. and our neighbour Helen, my husband's celiac, so she was experimenting making these Christmas fruit cakes gluten-free. I think she made 5 in total in experimenting, so we ate 5 cakes between us before Christmas. So there was it was a bit of a cake heavy Christmas this year, so don't do that. That would be my tip. My other tip would be don't drink a cup of tea at the Minak Theatre where the start is, because I bought a cup of tea just before the race, and then I just immediately needed the loo, and there's nowhere to hide for ages.
That's right.
Yeah, I didn't actually go to the loo until like about 3 hours later. And even then, I was just on the path and someone was coming, and I was just, don't look, just try not to look. And so that wasn't great.
Yeah. I made a point as soon as we got to the Minak Theatre to join the toilet queue.
Yeah.
I knew it was a long way to the checkpoint.
No, I had joined the toilet queue outside the Portaloos. I joined that as soon as we got there. I went to the loo as soon as we got there, but then I made the mistake of having this huge cup of tea, which just went straight through me.
Yeah,
not good. And then my other tip was don't take a litre of water at the start, because I only drank 500ml until Senen. But then with you and Sean saying that you took 2 litres, maybe for different people that people need to just individually think about that.
Yeah,
something
it depends
to think
how much
about
you
anyway.
Sweat and,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'm a heavy sweater or not, but I tend to drink quite a lot when I run.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I suppose also it depends what the temperature's like as well.
Because
it was a particularly hot day that year, and it probably, sod's law, it's going to be raining next year.
Or snowing. I'm sure it won't be as nice.
Yeah,
I'm already resigned to the fact it's going to be awful weather next year.
I know, for your 100. Oh my goodness, yeah. I had don't hang around any checkpoints, but you had that one. So my final tip to people is don't make a YouTube film, because it massively slows you down. You'll see, it is useful. I think it will be useful for people to have the film of it.
Yeah.
But if I was to try it again, I wouldn't make a film. And Sean said that he'd crew me and he'd film. So that's nice.
I think that's the way to do it. Like I said, I kept wanting to stop to take photos, but I would have been miles behind if I'd stopped at every beauty spot.
I didn't stop, but it's still the effort of getting it out, filming, like you're not concentrating on what you're doing. I just probably have to just race it next time. The irony is, I got back and I was like, oh, I'm not fit enough. Oh, blah, blah. And then the irony is, I think if I hadn't been making the film, I may have just scraped round, you know, like it was only 15 minutes. So who knows, but I'll just have to try again. I'm blaming the film and the lack of fitness and all the cake that I ate. Can you think of anything else that we need to tell tell people about the ARC 50? I feel like we've covered lots here today, and that we should wrap it up. But I just want to, yeah, from your point of view, is there anything else that you think we should mention to people doing the race next year?
I did eat on a coach going down because it's such an early start.
Yeah.
It's far too early for breakfast. So, yeah, I had something on the coach knowing that, you know, it was an 8:30 start. So yeah. I wasn't running on empty. I was fueled up, ready to go at that point.
That's a really good tip. I took a Tupperware of porridge that was a throwaway Tupperware from a Chinese that I could just throw away at the Minak Theatre. So you get the coaches at 5:30 and then the race doesn't start till 8:30. So yeah, I was eating that porridge on the coach, kind of forcing it down, to be honest, because it was still a bit early, wasn't it?
It was a bit.
Yeah.
It didn't actually bother me. At the Minak Theatre, I wasn't anywhere near the steps, so it took me a long time to get out. But
yeah. Me too.
Because it was an ultra, I thought, well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You
know, it's probably better to start slow.
Yeah, it was. And I was queuing, and even then I was really out of breath with the pace that we were going with the queuing. So I was kind of thankful to the queues. And Sean's still watching. I want to tell your boss, Sean, that you're not working. He said yes. Also, he ate 2 bagels on the coach as well. So, yeah, that's a really good tip, actually, outside of the race as well. Yeah. Right. Well, I think we should wrap up now. Thank you so much, Christian, for coming on and telling us all about your ARC experience. And congratulations with your 14 and a half hours and sub 14 and a half hours. Absolutely incredible. And just before we go, I do have to just mention the sponsor. I'm sponsored by NAC Nutrition for these live broadcasts. And so I ate these and these on the ARC and they were very nice and felt good on my stomach. So if you do want to try any of this for your next ultra, then just use my code WILDGINGERRUNNING for 15% off at uk.nac.com. So thanks so much, Christian. Looking forward to hearing about your progress on your hundreds and your dragon's back this coming year. And have a lovely weekend when it comes around.
Thank you.
Cool. Bye, bye everyone. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.